welcome to episode 88 of season 11 of Movie Reminiscence, the Daily Podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is Joe Amadei, a film buff and CEO of Virgil Films. Welcome back to the show, Joe.
Kelly-ho, good to see you again. Nice to see
Very
you.
Nice to see you. Very nice to see you.
Nice to hear you.
Tally-ho is the wrong movie's
I know.
But that's okay. It's a movie that I love also. So there you go.
I know.
And I got the reference right away.
Is that the first one we did?
That was the first one I did. That was my first.
Oh, okay. There you go.
That was my first season. And yes, that was the first one we did together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That movie never gets old.
Nope. Well, it gets older every year, but it doesn't like the rest of us, you know.
You know, you're still one of them.
But you don't
still
get
one of them to jump that second fence, man. You're still one of them to jump that second fence
every time, you know. And it doesn't matter to me whether it's McQueen or Bud. One of them is
going. Doesn't matter. I don't care.
Make it over.
Yeah, I don't care. I want to go back. I want to go to Germany and do one of those tours that visits all the sites where they made the film. But I don't know if that's going to happen anytime soon. But I do really want to go. I really want to go there.
But, well, you've been there, you know. So.
Well, I've been at a camp. I've been at a real camp.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. You want to go
where they filmed it? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Totally different location.
Ah. Okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you have souvenirs.
So, you know, let me tell you about some dirt.
We won't go back to that story. It's fine.
Yeah, we won't go there.
All right. So episode 88 begins with Lip coming out of hiding and ends with Joe getting patched up.
Yeah, this episode could be called When All Hell Breaks Loose.
Completely. So we ended things yesterday with us, you know, with the men finally returning to their foxholes and, you know, getting hit with a barrage of mortars and artillery from the Germans. And we already know that there's one casualty, but the men themselves don't know that yet.
Right.
You know, they're still trying to figure out what they need to do and you know what's going on.
Yes.
And so we start here with Lip coming out of his foxhole. You know, as the first sergeant, he knows it's his duty to go try and find whoever's you know, make sure that everyone's okay.
Yeah.
And he turns to the rest of the guys and goes, Stay in your foxholes. And he turns to one of the guys and he goes, are you okay? Can you walk? Come on. Find a foxhole. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, helping, you know, just making sure that... You see, for me, the part of the problem is that I don't know how a foxhole can really necessarily keep someone completely safe.
Well, it keeps you safe unless the bomb hits the foxhole.
Exactly.
Or if the debris falls on you, but, you know, when a bomb hits, I guess it splatters in every single direction.
They're shrapnel.
And that would protect you from the debris that's caused by the bomb exploding. But I've always felt the same thing. If the bomb falls in the foxhole, you know, which it does,
exactly.
as we know, then you know you're cooked. But also, you know, the bombs are trying, you know, I think one of the reasons for the bombs being dropped is to a certain extent they want, you know, the enemy wants you to get out of that foxhole and start running or show your head. How many movies have we seen where, you know, somebody takes a peek and they get shot, you know? So they're, you know, so it's just all part of the ugliness of being in battle like that.
Correct.
Yeah. Now at this point, this 5 minutes that just started, the bombs have stopped at this point.
Yes.
And Lipton is trying to make, you know, like you say, trying to, you know, find out who really needs help, if anybody needs help, and how everybody is at that point. And everybody is still in their foxholes.
Well, not
Just about
everybody, but
everybody. Just,
mostly everybody. Yeah.
yeah.
All right. And
And
then
friends don't know if their friends are safe, you know, the guys that are very close.
that's right.
And okay, yeah.
Great. And I mean, I think one of the great things they did in this series is that, in the minutes prior, in the almost half hour of screen time in this part before we reach this point, and in part six, when the whole Dacro centric episode, we see the guys in their various foxholes, and they're clumped together in twos and threes.
Yeah.
And we see that we see the bond between the men even in those moments. Here
Yeah.
you are stuck in a foxhole, at least overnight, maybe even just maybe for days with just one other guy, and you just come really, really close.
Oh, yeah.
And that's part of part of the feeling that they want us to get from this, and it works.
It definitely works, yeah.
And with Lip, being the central character here, for him to want to run around and make sure that everyone's okay and stuff like that's also, another storytelling device to move from place to place so that we get to see more and more of the men of and see what they're all dealing with, either together or separately, with this whole thing.
Yeah, because these are now characters that we've come to know.
Yes, not only come to know that with their characters we come to know and in some ways come to love.
Yeah, by this point in the show, you have an attachment to these, to each of these characters.
Exactly. 100%.
Some more than others, you know?
Right. Some of them stand out more than others. There's no
Yeah.
question about that. Again, that's also part of the reason that, from my perspective, that they chose that each of the 10 parts will be centric on a different character as the main person who's there, for on the one hand to let us get to know those characters better, but also to show us that this is not just a story of one man. This is a story of an entire company. And I mean, obviously they're limited because there's only 10 episodes, but they do as much as possible in order to make us feel and understand the bond that these guys got over the course of the time that they were, that they were in the army, during the entire 3 years that this series takes place over, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And I've mentioned this numerous times, and some of my guests have mentioned it also that there are so many stories just from Easy Company. We're not even talking about men from other units, just from Easy
That's
Company,
yeah, it's one company. Yeah.
that without that, here we have a story of 10 episodes of some of the guys. They could make numerous upon numerous miniseries about other guys that are
Thousands. Yeah, there's so many
no, I'm not
stories.
even thinking 1,000. I'm just talking about just about Easy Company. Forget about everyone
Oh,
else. I
okay,
mean,
yeah.
just to show how many stories they probably have just from the Easy Company guys, and then you can't even think of how many times infinity you want to add that to stories of guys in other units in other locations, in World War II and stuff like that. I mean, the number of stories are endless, from that perspective. And I know that a lot of that some of the guys were a little upset that their characters or that their lives weren't depicted as in the same way as some of the others. We see a lot of Garnier, we see a lot of Buck, we see a lot of Lipton, we see a lot of Winters. There are other guys that were just as prominent as they were in Easy Company, and they get small little parts here. That's
Yeah, and that's going to happen. I mean, that again, that's the, you know, the that's all in the writing and who the writer and all in the book too. I mean, you can't tell every story, but if you're talking about a company, and I mean, listen, it's like this, even the fictional films, the Dirty Dozen, there's six guys that the film really deals with, and the other six are,
Or Ken and Barbara.
that's going to happen. And it is a shame because, again, it goes back to, we talked about this yesterday. These are not fictional characters. They're real people. These are real names. These people had families. These people, not just the stars of the show. There was others as well. That's just filmmaking.
And again, part of the whole idea is that the trick, I guess, for this is that you have to take real stories and find a way to fictionalize them so
Yes.
that it flows better in this story, even though this is based on truth. There's nobody
Yes.
who will say that this miniseries is 100% true to form as to what happened
It
to these
can't be.
guys or
That's
anything like that.
impossible.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think there is such a thing. Even documentaries, and I know you're a
No.
documentarian, there's no
Yes.
documentary that will be 100% true also, because you have different perspectives on different things. That one person will look at it and say, oh, this is what happened. Another person will look at it and say, no, it happened slightly differently, whatever. I mean, documentaries can get very close to that 100% mark. But I don't believe that there are documentaries that have reached that 100% mark. Again,
It's impossible.
as a
It's impossible.
documentarian, maybe the percentage of how close it gets. I don't know.
No, it's really, I mean, the reason that they can't is that there's always a dissenting opinion about that story, about that, there's always somebody that is going to say that, say you're making a movie about a crime and we're talking about an individual that's associated with that crime, and everything is pointed towards this person being someone that is really part of the crime. And then you're going to have other people that will just disagree. So you're never going to have 100% agreement on anything. So no matter how close the documentary is, the filmmaker's truth. Okay, in most cases, it's what the filmmaker both believes, but it's also what the filmmaker wants to say when it comes to a documentary. Every documentary filmmaker has their own point of view about the subject they're telling. Now, a good documentary is you sit back and you let the story form itself, but if you're telling a story about the past, an archival film or something like that, you're going to have people that disagree. So, Supersize Me, for example, when we released Supersize Me, I remember there was people that said, Morgan Spurlock ate nothing but McDonald's for 30 days and look what happened to him. And there were other people that said, yeah, well, I ate McDonald's for 30 days and nothing happened to me, So, you can carve out your own opinion in your own movie. So documentaries, a lot of people say, they are the truth, but yeah, they're a slanted truth. And I make documentaries. I release documentaries. And that word slanted is probably, a hard, harsh word to use, but there's always somebody out there that's going to disagree with you.
That's true. I mean, is it the job of a documentarian to try to show both sides of a story? Or you would think
Supposed to be.
it's supposed to be? Okay.
Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. Sometimes there is nobody that can, again, if especially if you're doing a historical doc, sometimes it's hard to get that other side to talk because they don't exist anymore. They've died, or there is no, there isn't anybody that can be in your film or that wants to be in your film about the other side or talking about the other side. But I think most documentary filmmakers, you kind of know the story that you want to tell, especially if you're making a documentary about something that has happened already. The Did you see The Perfect Neighbor?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so The Perfect Neighbor, you kind of you almost have the feeling you kind of know what's going to happen 10 minutes into that movie, 15 minutes
Correct.
into that movie. Okay. So it's the filmmaker's job to tell this story about how what we already believe is going to happen, how it got to be that, you know, that it happened, you know, and then the aftermath as well. And that's what I thought was the strong part about The Perfect Neighbor. What happens after, you know, after the incident, I guess is the best way to say it without telling the story.
Right.
But that filmmaker definitely had their own point of view. You know, now maybe there was a filmmaker out there that wanted to tell the story directly from the perpetrator's point of view and slant it. I don't know. Does that story exist? I don't know. In another filmmaker's head,
I assume it exists. The question is whether, you know, whether someone's interested in telling that story.
Exactly. Yes. And why would they be interested in telling that story? But I don't know.
I don't know. Again, you need to have some sort of hook and some sort of reason that you would want to tell that story. I mean, just using the idea of the JFK assassination, right? You know, there are people who will say that it's Lee Harvey Oswald, and, you know, they can build their case around that. And then there are people who say it can't be because of X, Y, and Z. And then, you know, that's a story that people are interested in seeing both sides of that story.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. But at The Perfect Neighbor, maybe people aren't interested in seeing both sides of that story, you know, from that perspective.
I agree. Most people would not be interested in seeing any other side of that story.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, again, it's, you know, this is a fictionalized story of a real, you know, a real thing that happened, or a true story, but you can't, you know, you're going to have to make some cuts here and there. And I hate the word Hollywood eyes, but, you know, you have to still, the filmmaker on Band of Brothers still has to tell the story. So, yes, yeah, some characters are not going to get the same screen time storyline than others.
Right.
It's just the way it works out.
Right. And tomorrow we'll talk, we'll touch on that even more tomorrow.
Okay.
From that perspective. So then the shot changes and we get to see Joe Toy rolling around on the ground, and they give us a pretty graphic shot of his leg blown off. You know,
yes.
Again, kudos to the makeup and special effects to do this, because, you know, Kirk Acevedo has two legs, so they found a way to do it, and it's very effective because it looks very realistic.
Yes.
Actually, I wouldn't even say it looks very realistic. It looks more than realistic because, you know, and this isn't like Lieutenant Dan type of, this gets very graphic. And Toy just goes, I got to get up. I got to get up.
Gotta
I got
get
to
up.
Get up.
Gotta get up.
And then he goes, I need my helmet.
Lost it. He's
That's right. He's lost it, or he's lost his helmet. What are you referring to?
No, I think he's in such a state that he, when
course,
I say he's
of course.
mentally.
No, I know. I was just kidding.
Yeah, okay, yeah. He's lost his leg or his helmet. He's lost both.
That's right. He's lost his leg, he's lost his helmet, and he's lost his mind because of this.
Yeah.
And again, completely understandable that would happen. And, you know, then they show us Malarkey, and Malarkey hears in the distance Toy saying, I need help. And Malarkey goes, you hear that? And then we hear it again, I need help. And then Garnier goes, hey, is that Joe? You hear help. And he goes, yeah. Garnier goes, yeah, I think that's Joe. And he turns to Malarkey and goes, you stay here. And he just starts getting up out of the foxhole. Again, it shows the type of close friendship that these guys had, because, you know, Garnier is willing to go and risk his own life to go help his friend Joe Toy here.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that's going to stop him. Like, it's funny how he tells Malarkey to stay there, but he still gets up and goes.
Yeah.
You know, and then Buck stands up in his foxhole and starts screaming, stay down, stay down.
Yep.
And Lip is also, telling everyone, stay down. He's running across, and he's telling everyone to stay down. And he goes, stay in your foxholes, stay in your foxholes. Then we see that Lip gets into one of the foxholes, and he sees a hand in one of the foxholes. And you can still hear, and then you hear someone say, "Help, help, anyone there?" And Lip goes, "Jesus." And then the shot changes, and we're back with Joe. He goes, "I gotta get up. I gotta get up." And you know, as he's saying that, Garnier actually finds him, and he looks at him, and he goes, "Oh shit." Yeah. And you know, his job now is to try to comfort his friend and keep him as calm as possible. And he goes, "Come on, Joe. Come on, buddy. Come on.
And get him to a foxhole. Pull him to a foxhole.
Let's go. That's right." And he starts pulling him. And Toy says, "You said you'd get back to the States before me." And Garnier goes, "You ain't going anywhere. You're all right." Toy goes, I got to get my helmet." Now, I like the fact that they mentioned the fact that he says, you know, that these two guys had like a pact between them of, you know, which of them was going to actually make it back to the States beforehand. I mean, they're obviously, they're both referring to the fact that they would get there, you know, safe and sound.
Sure.
I don't think that their conversation was about that they were going to get injured, you know, along the way. But, you know, it's nice that they throw in this little brotherly jab, you know, where Toy's basically saying, "Well, you thought you were going to get there first. Looks like I'm going to be the first one there." You know, that type of thing.
But he's pulling him. He's trying to save his, help his friend.
Yeah.
And then it gets worse.
Yeah. And then Garnier says, "Forget it." He goes, "I gotta get my helmet." "Forget it, Joe." And then the shot changes, and we're back with Lip with the trapped soldier, trying to figure out how he's going to help, you know, this guy who's trapped. And he goes, "Anyone there?" And he goes, "Help." He goes, "Hang on." He goes, "Who's that?" And he goes, "It's Hef, Babe." And so this point we find out that that you know this is another one of your Philly guys, you know, this is Babe.
Yep.
And he goes, "Come on, get me out of here, Lip." And Lip starts pulling the trees away. And then we're back with Garnier and Joe, where he's still just trying to drag him out of there.
Yep.
Again, it's also very gruesome, the fact that he's dragging him, but you know, his half of his leg is still where it was. You know,
they keep on showing it too. Yeah,
that's right. And you know, because this is all being shown in the snow, so we also,
it's even bloodier.
That's right. We see how bloody this whole thing looks. You know, and you know, Garnier just keeps trying to pull him, and you know, the shot goes back to Lip, and he's got other guys, including Bull, who've come to help him try and pull off all these branches. And, you know, then it's back to Garnier pulling, you know, pulling Joe. He goes, "I got you. Come on, Joe. I got you. Come on, Joe." He goes, "Hang on." And then they're back to Lip again. It's great the way that they jump back and forth between these two situations, because you keep thinking to yourself that you know, the situation with Lip is going to be worse than what we're seeing with Toy and Garnier. I mean, this, in my opinion, is, you know, the writer's work, making sure that we're going to constantly guess and re-guess as to, you know, which of these two situations is going to get worse. We know something's getting worse. We just don't know which one.
Yeah, and they're setting us up. I mean, they're definitely setting us up, because, you know, you don't know what to expect when the branches are finally taken off of the foxhole, but you can hear the guy's voice. And
Well, you can hear Joe's voice too.
Yeah, but you can, you know, Bill's pulling Joe, and you think, all right, he's gonna get him to the foxhole. You know, his friend's gonna help him.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So it's kind of setting us up, because that's not what happens.
That's right. And then Lip finally you know, finds a way to get the Babe, and he goes, "Are you okay?" And he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Come on, come on." And Babe goes, "Geez, I think I overdid it on the cover of my foxhole."
Yeah.
Meaning that it wasn't that something really fell on him. It was just the idea that he got stuck under the trees. And maybe, no.
There's yeah, under the tree. Trees, and he put on top of himself.
And there's another tree that fell on him, or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then they hear the shrills in the air once again, and Lip goes,
"Here they come.
Incoming! Take cover!" At this point, we see that everything is total chaos. Of everything,
total chaos.
You know, and we see from Buck's perspective, and Buck is watching, you know, Garnier and Joe come towards him, and he goes, come on, hurry up, Garno, you're gonna get bombed, come on. He goes, move it, Bill. And he goes, come on, Joe. You know, he's doing all he can to, you know, it's interesting that Buck isn't getting out of the foxhole to go help him. You know, right. Again, in hindsight, it was a good move that he didn't. But you know, but you'd think that would be someone's first instinct, just like it was Garnier's instinct to go run and look for Joe. You'd think Buck would have done it also, but he didn't. And you know, Garnier keeps pulling Joe, and he goes, "Come on, Joe," and. We see that Buck actually starts getting out of. He's reached a point where he's like, "All right, I gotta go help them," and he's about to start getting out of this foxhole. And he goes, "Hold on, I'll be there. I'm gonna help you." And then there's this huge explosion that happens right around them, and we see that Buck is thrown back into the foxhole, and you know, he screams "No!" as he falls backwards. And you know, they do a nice job here of. I mean, first of all, we can see the trail of blood, you know, of Garnier, you know, dragging Joe across this whole area. And, you know, the way that they set this up, you know, the explosion goes off. We see Garnier fall down also, but we can't see what exactly happens. I mean, the initial... The initial thought watching this probably for the first time is that Garnier has now also been killed, you know, because of the way that the bomb explodes on the ground there, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Buck just lies back on the ground, and then someone jumps into the foxhole with him. And we see Lip is also now stuck under trees, and they continue with the barrage of artillery just flying all over the place. Lots of pyrotechnics.
Yeah, all of this is happening. And it's, and again, like you had mentioned earlier, it's pure chaos. It's nothing.
Right.
It's, you know, that's the hell that I mentioned yesterday.
Yes.
The hell of battle. And they're showing it to us.
Exactly.
And characters that we love are, you know, are hurt or dying or dead. And it's almost happening in rapid fire. It's not just one. It's, you know, this is all happening over, at least for me, you know, 8 minutes of watching it so far, or, you know, getting close to 10 minutes, and all hell is just broken loose.
Yeah, completely. And then we get more narration from Lipton, and he goes, "During the second barrage, I wasn't laughing anymore."
He wasn't laughing about the fireworks anymore.
That's right. And then the camera pans, you know, across the whole area, and then it ends up showing us both Toy and Garnier just lying on the ground. You see all the blood from Toy's leg, and you see Garnier's leg also. There's a lot of blood there also.
Yeah. And who yells medic?
That's Lip.
Is that Lipton or Buck?
The medic, no, the medic is some guy that we don't know who it is.
Oh, okay.
We can't tell who it is because Buck is stunned. Buck is.
Yeah, Buck is definitely stunned.
Right, he's stunned, and Lipton is somewhat trapped at this point.
Yeah.
You know, and then again the explosions continue, and we see like a full tree fall down, and lots of branches, and like half of another tree comes falling down also. I mean, again, the production design here is amazing from that
point. You know, and it's interesting because, you know, up until this film was produced, I don't remember, you know, Battle of the Bulge or any of the films that I previously seen when there's major battles in forests, in the woods. You know, they always deal with this just the soldier on the ground. this, when they were showing the trees cut in half and tops of trees falling down from the sky, which is just as all could be just as deadly as the bomb itself, and total, forest being decimated. I never seen it depicted like this before.
Right.
And that just made it even more realistic.
Yeah, for sure. And then we get a shot of Luz. He pops out of his foxhole and he goes, "Lip." And Lip turns to him and goes, "Are you okay?" He gives him the thumbs up. And he goes, "Stay down. You stay down." And then behind Lip, Dyke shows up, and he's disheveled. He doesn't have his helmet on. And he goes, "First Lieutenant Lipton, you get things organized here. I'm gonna go for help." Then he, just turns around and runs away. And then Luz looks over and goes, "What the f-?"
What the fuck?
He goes, "Lip, where the f-? Is he going?" Lip says, "I don't know. Listen, get battalion on the line. Tell them to notify BAS." And Luz then takes the radio and he goes, "Battalion's up, Lip." And then the shot changes and we're back with Buck, who is pretty disheveled
Pretty
at
dazed.
this point and dazed as to what's going on. And he basically just looks out at his friends, and he doesn't know how to react even. And he just starts going,
Yeah, he's
medic.
shell shocked.
He says, "Medic." And then you see that he takes off his helmet and drops his helmet, which to me, this is a great shot. It just, the visual way that they depict, shell shock of a character who has just seen two of his friends that are, that have been basically decimated. And he just doesn't, I mean, he drops his gun and, as far as he's concerned, that he's had enough of this. That's what it comes down to. And then Lip starts running through and he goes, "Stay ready, stay ready. Those stupid son of bitches might be trying to come through." And he passes one of the other guys and he goes, "You okay, One Lung?" And he goes, "Sergeant." And so One Lung is Irma Klung, who's one of the guys. He apparently was, I think it was like half Cherokee, and he's one of the guys who didn't get injured at all. He made it
Oh,
through,
wow.
the whole thing without that anything happening to him. He was also known as he was an excellent marksman and things like that. No, so he was a Native American from Washington. I don't know if he was a half or not. No, maybe not. I read an interesting story about how he got his name of being called One Lung. Apparently Allie and Rogers were setting up their machine guns near McClung, and they decided that he was going to be the machine gunner, and he wasn't happy about being the machine gunner, but he still took the job. And then Rogers ended up writing a poem about the incident, similar to the poem that we had about the Knight of the Bayonet, which they talked about earlier, when Smith stabbed Talbert in the middle of in the middle of the night. And the poem has a line, "Who hung the gun on One Lung of McClung?" And
Wow.
that's how they started calling him that after
That's how they started calling him.
that. It just stuck.
Interesting.
It just stuck. And this is a guy who lived to the age of 90.
Jeez.
He passed away in 2013.
Wow.
Then Lipton continues down the line and he sees Popeye and he goes, "How you doing, Popeye?" And he goes, "100% ready to kill Germans, Lip." And he gives him a little smirk as he walks by. And again, it's showing us that Lip is caring for all the men as he's running past them. And then he reaches the point where Toy is and Garnier. And Doc Rowe is already there trying to fix up Toy. You can see while he's fixing up Toy that Garnier's leg is like twitching, which is interesting that they show it that way also. And then Doc says, "Okay, Joe." And Malarkey shows up and goes, "Doc, what can I do?" He goes, "Hold this." And Malarkey's also really shocked about everything that's going on. He's telling him just hold the bandage and try to keep Joe calm at the same time. And then Joe turns to Malarkey and goes, "You got a smoke?"
Yeah, it's true.
And Malarkey gives him a look, and then he goes, "Jesus, what's a guy got to do to get killed around here?"
Yeah. He got a smoke.
And then Malarkey goes, "Joe," as he's starting to take out a cigarette to give it to him. And that's how this 5-minute segment ends. Again, leaving us a little bit on a cliffhanger as to what's really going to happen here. Yeah. What's going on?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, this was rough.
Yeah.
And it's going to continue to be rough.
That's right.
Yeah, this is Saving Private Ryan rough. This was a tough, tough 5 minutes. Well, like I was saying, the whole episode is very, very emotional, very gut-wrenching to watch. Hard to watch.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But good. Really good.
I completely agree.
Yep.
Completely agree with you on that. All right. So now we will play today's segment, which is a game. And it's World War II movie trivia. So let's see how many Great Escape questions Joe is going to get.
No, geez. Here we go.
Well, you should feel safe that if you do get the Great Escape questions, you're pretty familiar with them. So, and you actually did get a Great Escape question.
All right.
Okay, in the Great Escape, where did Sedgwick find an ally during his escape?
At a cafe.
Exactly. At a cafe in France. Perfect. There you go. All right, let's spin the wheel again. Obviously there are a lot more Great Escape questions here than some of the other movies, so it is possible, but, okay, well, this time you're not getting a question from there.
All right.
It's going to be a different movie. Okay, in the 1956 movie The Bold and the Brave. Okay. Who can you name two of the three main characters?
No.
Okay.
I will be 1,000% honest.
Even the actors. I'm talking about the actors.
I've never seen that movie.
Okay.
The Bold and the Brave. Is Robert Taylor in that movie?
Not Robert Taylor, Don Taylor.
Yeah. See, I Gloria Graham.
Nope.
No. Yeah, I've never seen that film.
Okay, so Don Taylor, Mickey Rooney, and Wendell Corey.
There you go. Now I gotta write that. I'll write that down because now I gotta find it to see it. Thanks.
Okay. I gotta tell you, I didn't love it, but it was, it was still a good movie. All right, so let's move on to the next question. Joe, you're not going to believe it. You got another Great Escape question. Interesting. What is, again, I know you know this answer, but, I wrote the questions before, so there's nothing I can do about that. What's the reason that Roger doesn't want Blythe to go on the escape?
because he's too heavy, and he can't fit through the tunnel. And he's blind.
He's blind. Okay. that's more like it, because he's blind. Yes. All right, let's spin the wheel for your fourth question. Okay, in the movie Stalag 17, what character does Robert Strauss play?
Animal.
Exactly. Very good.
Good movie.
Love that movie. Love that movie. It's on my list for the future, but I gotta veer away from World War II movies a little bit right now. Have you ever seen the movie 36 Hours?
Yes, I have.
In the movie 36 Hours, who plays the German doctor pretending to be an American in order to fool James Garner's character, Jefferson Pike?
Did Rod Taylor play the doctor?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
There you go, Rod Taylor. He played Major Walter Gerber. I love 36 Hours. About 20 something years ago, a girlfriend of mine, said, "Oh, have you ever seen this movie?" And I'm like, "No, I never saw it." And, you know, we just sat down and watched. I was enthralled. I love the concept of the movie.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And I also love, I mean, I'm not going to give away the spoiler, but I love the way that, you know, the main character figures out what's going on.
Yeah.
It's very, very amazing.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool movie.
Yeah. All right, so now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie. So we will now spin the wheel and see what movie Joe gets. Let's see if it's something that hopefully it'll be something that he's seen. Let's spin the wheel and see what we get. Okay, this is a movie from 2017, directed by Christopher Nolan. Do I have to give you any more information?
Dunkirk?
Yes, very good. Excellent, nicely done.
Good film.
Yes. I mean, again, I love the concept of three different times, stuff like that. Yeah. You know, works really well. All right. So, Joe, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Joe Amade?
Yes, they can find me at joe@virgilfilmsent.com, or just go to virgilfilms.com, and all of our information is on that website.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can send me an email to movierobminute@movierob.net. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Instagram. So, until tomorrow, curry!
Curry!